We're talking about school resource officers, or SROs, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Districts across Wisconsin are revisiting their contracts with police in recent weeks in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis that sparked a nationwide movement against police violence. Critics have voiced concerns over how SROs treat students of color and that their presence makes for an unsafe environment. Supporters counter that when school policing is done well, officers can serve in a mentor or counselor role to students. How do you feel about SROs in Wisconsin public schools? We're at 800-642-1234. Larry Miller is District 5 representative on the Milwaukee Public Schools Board of School Directors, and he serves as president of the 9-member board. Larry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you having me.
Well, explain for us, with the unanimous vote last week, all but one contract severed with the Milwaukee Police Department. What does that mean exactly for our public schools in Milwaukee?
Well, let me give a little bit of a background. In 2016, Milwaukee Public Schools removed SROs from being assigned inside buildings. The police were treating many behaviors as criminal acts, leading to tickets and arrests. So that ended in 2016. The last 4 years, we've had contracts with a unit of officers to act as one, a rapid response team, two, a truancy abatement, and three, for special duties. This has cost the district over $1 million a year. On June 18th, we voted to end those contracts to divert funds to deepen what we believe are student-centered policies of restorative practices and trauma care. We believe that the district should not have to pay the police department all this money to do what they should already be doing. So really the taxpayers end up double paying for what should already be the responsibility if good policing were going on.
But there is still one contract, right, with the police department?
Yes, it's what's called the TABS. It's a truancy abatement program. It's mandated by the state legislature. So we are very aggressively working to, because that amounts to over $400,000. We're very aggressively working to keep that money and to change the state law that requires only the city of Milwaukee to have a TABS program at this level of spending.
The district received hundreds of emails and letters about this decision. What have you been hearing from people in the community?
Well, there have been a few responses against us ending these contracts, but the vast, overwhelming response has been there's no place for daily policing among our students. And to be perfectly honest, this effort to end these contracts has been led by students. It's been a movement that's been going on for a while. There's one particular group called LIT, Leaders Igniting Transformation, that has played a major role in dialoguing, coming to meetings. This has been going on for 3 years. And we feel that it's come to a point that the time is right to look at other ways to deal with issues of discipline and which you call our juvenile crimes. sometimes they're what goes on in schools, and we don't see them necessarily as crimes, but they, if the police are in the building, they act as many things are criminal acts. And like I said earlier, leads to tickets and arrest. That's why we removed SROs in 2016.
Larry Miller with us, who sits on the Milwaukee Public Schools Board of School Directors, serves as president of the board. Do you support the decision to terminate contracts between the school district and the police department? What do you think the alternative should look like? We're at 800-642-1234. Larry, now that the school resource officer program is ending, how is the district approaching safety in schools for students and staff, and especially around large gatherings?
Well, we have a very large Department of Security, which is our safety staff, and they are very well trained in doing the kind of responses that we need. Now, everyone knows that if something happens in a school, the police can be called. I mean, everybody has the right to call the police to a situation, whether it's a principal, a teacher, a parent who's not even in the building. That's a citizen's right. But the way we're going to, the way we intend to deal with the interactions that go on a daily level is through the use of our own staff, the training of our staff, using restorative practices, de-escalation policies. There's just a whole variety of things that we know work and are the direction that we want to go to resolve conflicts that do come up in schools. It's really a matter of dealing with our community as a community and not bringing in an outside force.
Has de-escalation and other tactics been used alongside the SRO program all along?
To a greater or lesser effect, yes, it has. But we need more training. We need every staff person. We have nearly 10,000 staff in Milwaukee Public Schools. We need every staff person trained in restorative justice practices. We need these sort of things to be just ingrained into how we do things. And also, if people look at the data, read books like The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, we know there's a school-to-prison pipeline. We know there's mass incarceration. We have to turn this around as a society. Now, one of the things that our society does, and clearly in the state of Wisconsin, they expect the schools to solve all of the problems that whole communities have. Well, we're not capable of doing that, but what we can do is train our staff in the kind of policies that are necessary, and we can have anti-racist curriculum and culturally responsive approaches to everything we do in schools.
So when you look at the contracts and what they cost, where will you direct the funds? The contracts would have cost about $500,000 during the 2020-21 school year.
We're going to put those into we want to hire social workers, more nurses, psychologists, guidance counselors, trauma specialists. But this savings amounts will fall far short of the funding needed for our schools to meet our students' needs. But it starts moving in the right direction. But we also feel it's time for everyone in this state to get involved in demanding the level of investment our children deserve.
So when you look at the relationship, between the Milwaukee Police Department and Milwaukee Public Schools, without these contracts, what will that be like?
Well, police have to do their job, but we want them to do it better. If you look at the history of policing in Milwaukee, there's some real ugliness. You can start with the Joel Acevedo case that's being discussed in the papers right now. This is an officer that did a chokehold, an off-duty officer, on a young man. You can look at the Dontre Hamilton case that happened 5 years ago. In Red Arrow Park, directly across from City Hall, where a mentally ill young man was asleep and ends up being woken by a police officer and shot 14 times at close range. I mean, these are the sorts of relationships that we've seen between the police in Milwaukee. So when our students don't trust the police on the street, how do we expect them to trust them if they're moving up and down our hallways?
Pausing with Larry Miller on the Idea
Checking
Network.
The W.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the role of school resource officers, SROs, and recent action by the Milwaukee Public Schools Board voting to sever ties with its Milwaukee Police Department contracts, all but one. Are you a student, teacher, or administrator? How do you feel about this decision? What do you think about Milwaukee schools not buying new metal detectors or scanners? Should there be a police presence at large gatherings on school grounds? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We have MPS School Board President Larry Miller, who stays with us. Larry, I want to go back to 2016 here for a moment. MPS had paid officers, you know, to patrol neighborhoods around some schools and monitor dismissals and athletic events. And unlike other districts, officers were not or are not posted inside the schools. When you put them outside the schools, what change did you see in 2016?
Well, before 2016, they were in the hallways. After 2016, we had a faster response time. We had a variety of things that occurred. The issue is we're paying for this. This should be what the police are doing as a part of their job. This should not have to be paid. They should not have to be paid extra to be outside of a school. That's their responsibility as a police force to do all sorts of things in communities. This should not. The citizens are already paying these officers as officers, and then we're giving the city a double pay for doing the job that they should already be doing. It doesn't make sense. And the Milwaukee taxpayers have made that quite clear to us. They do not appreciate that they've been put in this position.
Let's look at the equipment like metal detectors, scanners. Where are you at with new purchases or the ones that you have already in place in the schools?
The resolution that was passed requires that the district not buy new equipment for those purposes.
How do you feel about that?
I think that's fine. I think what we have is fine, and I think the way that we interact with the public should not be by using the kind of equipment that actually puts students in. They're not getting on a plane. They're not terrorists. They're not thugs, as they're called by the person occupying the White House. They are our students, and so we want to be able to interact with them in a positive way. We can check backpacks. There's all sorts of things that we can do to maintain safety in gatherings, as students enter schools. There's just a variety of ways that we can do. We do not need to spend a fortune on this equipment that's lobbied for and spent. It's a huge industry all across the country. And if you look at the data where there's been mass shootings, often there has been this equipment in those cases. So there has to be other sorts of policies and procedures that prevent those sort of things from happening.
But will schools continue to use these devices, to use metal detectors that are currently operating when school resumes?
We'll be having that discussion with individual schools. We want the students, parents, and staff of those schools to engage in a robust discussion of the use of that equipment. And we will look at what they're saying.
Larry Miller is with us, a representative on the Milwaukee Public Schools Board of School Directors. He serves as president of the 9-member board. You can join in. Educators, what have you witnessed and learned from the presence of school resource officers? Do you think police officers in schools, around schools, have a positive impact on student behavior or a negative one? Join in with your observations and your questions, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. So, Larry, I want to look at the timeline going forward. The vote was unanimous. The contracts are to be severed. But how will this all unfold?
Actually, we'll be coming back to the board to to look at how this is going to happen. I think that the process of students coming into buildings is going to take some time because of COVID-19, and so there will be a robust discussion as to how we will operate. We'll be talking with individual schools, we'll be talking with students. It's going to be a very important discussion on how safety will be approached, how staff and students will be trained in supporting that safety. Just a whole variety of things will be taking place.
Have you looked at other cities like Denver and Minneapolis and Portland that are in the same boat here, severing ties with their school resource officers?
Well, I know that the administration has been looking very carefully at all of this, and they will be reporting on it. I know that it's true that there are a number of districts that are approaching this in a similar fashion, and so we're going to be aligning the experiences of these cities.
Well, Larry, while I have you on the line, I want to ask you about COVID-19 and how MPS is preparing for the fall. What is the board talking about, and how are administrators preparing for the return of students in the fall?
Thank you for asking about that. We had a special board meeting last Thursday, which was an initial presentation by the, well, it was actually the second major presentation by the administration about possible policies. We were waiting for the DPI report, which just was presented to us yesterday. It's a little bit daunting.
87 pages. Yes.
Mm-hmm. 87 pages. Mm-hmm. I'm about a third of the way through it with my in my second read, and so it's complex, and there has to be a lot of things that are happening now. At our full board meeting on Thursday, we're getting another update report, and then we don't normally meet in committee through the month of July. We just have our full board meeting at the end of July, but we'll probably end up in the middle of July having a full board meeting, because we have to be able to tell our families and our students, what is the plan? Do we all come back mid-August? Do we all come back after Labor Day? We have not made those decisions yet, and we're looking at all the variables and working very closely with the Milwaukee Health Department and the state health departments and the Department of Public Instruction to come up with a plan. But we're looking at all the possible scenarios, and it basically comes down to staying at home, a hybrid of staying at home and being in school, or bringing students back to school. It's those three possibilities, and where do we sit in all of that? My thinking, and this is just myself, with the DPI saying this will probably go on for 12 to 18 months, I think we're going to phase in and out of all three of those possibilities: remote learning, hybrid, and in school learning. I noticed that they said bring the younger children back first. I mean, there's just a whole variety of things that we have to consider. A lot of moving parts.
Parents are really concerned that social distancing and kids doesn't really hold up, that kids don't truly understand, and that we're looking at some schools that have been overcrowded to begin with. How do you broach that social distancing when classrooms are crowded?
Well, we're going to have to do things like half day schooling, and divide the population into different groups. A week, B week. There's just a whole variety of ways to take into account what exactly what you're talking about. It's good, because younger children, hugs and playing is part of the learning process, and so we have to figure out how we're going to do that. And I'm, of course, believe that all children, all adults, should be wearing masks. I believe in hand sanitizing. There's all sorts of controversy, I guess. But the reality is these things do have an important effect.
Do you think that your 9-member board is working together on these issues, like school resource officers and the pandemic? Do you feel like you're on the same page?
Generally, yes. Yes. It's this is a board that was elected a year ago last April. I've been on the board now. This is my 12th year. And I've been through all sorts of debates and conflicts, but this board, I believe, is truly centered on what's best for kids and is willing to make the hard decisions about what needs to happen. And they are very based in listening to the community, because in a district that has 160 schools, every school could look different. You know, many will be similar, but every school could look different. And so we really have to listen to 160 plus communities. It's critical for us to do that. For example, a number of parents are already saying, I want to homeschool my kids. So we have to take that into account. Many parents are saying, we have to have our kids in school. How are we going to go to work? I mean, there's just all of these tensions that are coming together, and our board will be very good at listening to these different thinking and thoughts that come from our communities.
Larry, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Larry Miller, District 5 representative on the Milwaukee Public Schools Board of School Directors, and serves as president of the board. Coming up, we talk more about how school resource officer programs operate in schools. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about public school districts revisiting their police contracts. Here is Madison School Board President Gloria Reyes in a Facebook post earlier this month as she stood outside her home where protesters had gathered urging her to remove police from schools. Reyes supports police in schools.
You take out officers out of our schools, they will still be called because we have the same issues. I have talked to many principals and staff in our schools who are concerned about what is happening in our schools. I have talked to many parents in this community, in this city, who are concerned about the safety of their children in our schools, and that includes me.
Do school resource officers make schools safer or more dangerous? Do you want funding for SROs to continue in your district? 800-642-1234. John Rosiak is founder of Prevention Partnerships. It's a consultancy firm and working in the areas of crime prevention and school resource officer programs, among other justice areas. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here, Kate.
Well, let's step back here. Not all school districts have a school resource officer program. What is the relationship between law enforcement agencies and schools like this?
You're right that not all school districts have relationships, but a lot do. The best numbers we have from national data would be something like over 50,000 law enforcement officers are in schools every day, and something like three quarters of the larger schools do have a school resource officer for at least part time. So lots do, many don't. And if I may add, and I think this is going to be something we talk about, it's done really differently in a lot of communities.
Yeah. What types of variations do you see from one community to the next that you work with?
Well, I've had the opportunity, Kate, to work with folks all around the country, and I'm astonished at the diversity. And the diversity really depends very often on what the local issues are, what the local problems are. Communities might be putting cops in schools for a variety of different reasons, but who they put in and the roles that they play and the training that they can provide and what their agreement looks like, the memorandum of agreement that kind of governs this thing. And the engagement with the community varies very greatly by community, by issue, and by resources that they have or don't have.
Well, some of that variation may include that, school resource officers are posted at doors or just outside the campus. Some school resource officers might be in plain clothes. Others might be in a formal police uniform. When you see those variations from one program to the next, are there any best practices that you see?
Oh, definitely. We have a sense of best practices, and we have a sense too of things that aren't going well. And Kate, I want to acknowledge up front is that the decision about putting a law enforcement officer, a cop, in a school really is a local decision, and it needs to be driven by best practices, by a sense of what we know from our experience over the years, a sense of the research and what that research is locally, and that's going to help determine the different kinds of practices. Your question was about what officers do, for example, and the variety that they do. There are a lot of officers, and I've had the opportunity to work with some of these folks for many years because I'm a prevention guy. I started my work in crime prevention many years ago. So we have a lot of prevention-oriented folks who are in schools, and some of them are teaching classes, maybe drug abuse prevention or gang prevention, or I know officers now are going in and teaching students about the dangers of sexting and all these very important contemporary issues. So there's that teaching role. There's also, I have to say, from the folks I've worked with for decades, is those who aren't assigned on a regular teaching capacity are playing more of a role of what's called an informal counselor or mentor, and kind of building relationships with students so that they can help figure out, is there something going on here that we as a community, meaning the school community and maybe the broader community, need to attend to. And that might be having that officer give a warm handoff, is what it's called, to a counselor in school. The officer might identify an issue because of his or her role and his or her relationship. But then using that knowledge that they have is to help get that student the resources that they need to stay in school and to do well. So that those are some of the varied functions. We have other functions in terms of officers who are playing more of a public safety role, meaning they're there. And then in terms of the primary role of a school resource officer, it's for public safety. If something should go down, a violent event, for example, a weapon comes to school, is that officer is there and then can be there for public safety reasons.
We're talking with John Rosiak, founder of Prevention Partnerships. You can join in. Did you or do you currently go to a school with a school resource officer present? What is that experience like? What relationships are there? What effect has it had on the educational environment? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Katrina, who's joining us from Grand Chute this morning. Hi, Katrina.
Good morning. Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. And I am a senior citizen, and I think that that with the huge drug problem we have in this country, that anything that can be done to with the use of sniffer dogs and everything, and police in the school to help
curb the drug issue. Katrina, thank you for the call. What is the role, John, of DARE programs with school resource officers?
Well, the DARE program, many people might know, the Drug Abuse Resistance and Education Program, has been around for years and years, and early on, a lot of law enforcement agencies invested in it. Some of your listeners may know that there, and this goes way back into the 80s and 90s, is there was a big meta-analysis of the program then in terms of, did it really have an impact to reduce drug abuse itself? And those results at that time were no. It had some other positive effects, but not so much that. And And I think the program may have gone under a number of revisions. But the point is that officers in school can play a really important part in prevention, in preventing problems to begin with. Kate, I started my career as an educator in the 1970s teaching social justice issues. And one of my side responsibilities was to teach the drug prevention module, which was frankly very primitive back then. And, you know, we gave a lot of information. And the idea was if you give people the right information, they'll make the right choices. We've learned a lot about prevention over the years. And for example, of how important it is to help people develop social skills and peer resistance and positive peer experiences, all those kinds of things. And I know that there are a lot of schools doing a lot of very good work in that area with educators and counselors and law enforcement, all kind of teaching those same kinds of resistance skills.
So what I'm hearing is a lot of efforts toward education and counseling and mentoring. But in the numbers, at least in Milwaukee, they bear this out that, you know, students of color are disproportionately affected here. They are disproportionately affected by way of citations and by arrests. So how do you decipher that with school resource officers when children of color are being affected here, their lives?
This is a really important historical moment that we're in, where we're recognizing as a field, the communities are recognizing that we need to do some things differently. We need to take, when I say we, I'm talking about school and communities. If they decide to keep cops in schools, they need to look at that data. Are we arresting kids when in fact we don't need to do that? Are we suspending or expelling kids of color disproportionately, which should not be done? So this is really a good opportunity for communities to step back and look more critically at what they're doing, how what changes they make, and to reexamine the question as if we put cops in schools, how do we do it right? It's really a question of whether you do it, and if you decide to do it, how do we define proper roles? How do we select the right officer? We haven't talked about that. Absolutely crucial. How do you get them the right training? That's all kinds of training. What's your memorandum of agreement, your guiding document look like? And what's the partnership with the community? And how is all that driven and informed by data? So you can decide if we're going to do this, let's do it right. If we're not going to do it right, don't do it.
We're talking with consultant John Rosiak, who works with school resource officer programs around the country. Educators, we want to hear from you. What have you learned from the presence of SROs? Do you think police officers in schools have a positive impact on student behavior or a negative one? Do you work in law enforcement or juvenile corrections? What is your take on the call to remove officers from schools? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a minute with John Rosiak right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the role of school resource officers this hour and the renewed discussion to remove officers from schools that comes amid the nationwide protests following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Still time for your insights, your experiences with SROs, 800-642-1234. We have John Rosiak, a consultant who works with districts on their programs, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Sarkis is with us from Manitowoc. Hi, Sarkis.
Hi, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
So I have kind of an interesting take on this because growing up, I witnessed the Columbine massacre on TV and saw the change with schools bringing in SRO officers. And as a kid, great experience. Our SRO officer at my public school was fantastic, had a great relationship with her. I'm an adult now, and I'm a public school teacher, and I've worked with many SRO officers. And again, some of them build great rapport with the kids, awesome, connections and relationships. But then you have those other officers who treat the school's hallways just like they treat the streets. And I think it really boils down to what kind of training do these officers get, and how do districts and local police departments choose which officers get to go into these schools? Because those are two very critical components to this program that, if overlooked, can lead to really terrible outcomes.
Sarkis, thank you. Great questions. John?
Sarkis, I thank you very much for those comments. Thanks for teaching high school. It's such an important job in our communities. Sarkis raises two very important things that communities have to address head on, and everybody can always improve in this point. If a community, come back to the question of if a community decides to put law enforcement in schools, how do they select that officer? And how do they train that officer? So a couple words about selection. You know, there I was talking with recently with the head of one of the state, not Wisconsin, another state school resource officer program. And she was sharing with me a concern that I've heard over the years. And it's a very important concern, is that not every community has enough officers to kind of hold a good process where they get to have a good application and put somebody through a rigorous process. And sometimes the people are just assigned and they may not be the right person. That's the issue. If you're not going to have the right person, why do that program? So for communities to really hopefully have more opportunity to raise questions of that officer through a good process involving not just law enforcement, and keep in mind that most of these school resource officers work for the law enforcement agency, although it may feel like they work for schools, but how does the school have an input into that? But also, does the community have an input into that process by raising, what are the questions that we want to know of this officer? How would he or she handle these situations? And that process is going on kind of unevenly in my observation, and could always be improved. On the issue of training, I was speaking with, I do a graduate school of public health every summer, I do a module on this issue of cops in schools. And my students last week were really surprised, and most of them didn't know that school resource officers had other training or were supposed to have other training. They just thought that, oh, they took somebody off the street and put them in the schools. Officers do have, or certainly should have, basic school resource officer training. They should have advanced training. In my opinion, they should go through training with school administrators, and they should be trained in all kinds of other issues like crisis intervention team training, mental health first aid, trauma-informed care, de-escalation, implicit bias, child development, all kinds of things to help them do their job, because it's a very specialized profession. And it, again, if you're going to do it right, do it well, select well, and train well.
Let's bring in another call. Bruce is joining us from Madison. And Bruce, I understand you are a retired SRO.
Yes, I am. I worked several years in a rural school in Wisconsin here. And, my concern is these days, not every school needs a resource officer, but some of the rewarding things that I recall as a resource officer working in that is that not every time you arrest somebody, it's a bad thing. I don't know how many times I encourage students to go to court so they get that court experience. They stand in front of a judge and are accountable for what they do. And that way there, they sometimes come back with a whole new perspective, finding out that judges are not a villain. Law enforcement officers are not a villain, not in every case. But I do understand that training and selecting the right officer is so important, because if you don't select the right person in that job, they could come in and act like a paramilitary police officer, and that's not what most schools need. I know Milwaukee and Madison, they're looking for more of a social worker police officer, but sometimes you do have to, be the person who's going to be the hard nose.
Bruce, I want John to be able to respond to you there in saying that not every arrest is negative.
So I think what Bruce points out is we have an opportunity the way we do any job. And when it comes to the school resource officer, is how do we get the best for our kids? My particular approach is that I'm all about diversion. And I've written a lot about this and trained on this issue for communities and school communities and including the school resource offer to community to figure out how do we divert a young person from the juvenile justice system. And what does that look like? For example, there was a movement in the country. It's called School Justice Partnerships to recognize that there are kids out there who do things that could be arrested for, could be suspended or expelled for. But some of these are more minor offenses. And how can we take another approach? Sometimes I'm actually on a local teen court board in my own community, and we have kind of like what Bruce is talking about. We have an opportunity for these students to go through a situation where they're in court before their peers who have input into what they do. Now, these are diverted from regular justice system so that they hopefully get the support they need to stay in school and to do well. I'm all about diversion. I think we should do whatever we can to divert kids, all kids, from justice involvement. And school resource officers can play a role in that. I have officers who tell me that I'm training, John, I don't want to arrest a student unless I really have to. And that's the kind of student, the SRO, rather, I want to have in my school.
John, you know, as school districts either terminate their police department contracts or are about to, what are their next steps? What should they be thinking about?
Well, it's interesting because I watched that with great interest now. And I think, first of all, and going back to is communities, the next steps are to take a hard look at what you're doing in your school and in your community. If you've already made the step, the decision to say, we're not going to do this program anymore, I have to tell you, Kate, that I think based on the experience in the country with school shootings, for example, is that there's going to be interest that when the next school shooting happens, and it's going to happen because we have so many guns in this country, is that there's going to be concern for communities. Hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't have taken our cops out of schools. We need to put them back in. So in terms of next steps, for people to be open to a discussion about looking critically at everything they're doing, if they decide to put cops in schools, what's that look like if they decide to take them out? What are the alternatives? How do we handle safety issues? I was in a situation a few years ago now where, and we hear this, people came up to me and said, we don't need cops in schools. But a counselor came up and said, I heard the conversation. I believe the counselor said we need both cops and counselors. And that counselor might need somebody to go in to go into a home visit for safety reasons, may need an officer to accompany.
John, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
John Rosiak, founder of Prevention Partnerships. Earlier, we talked with Larry Miller, the president of the Milwaukee Public Schools School Board. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On Point is next. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.